Coming up on Boston Public Radio, Aaron Hernandez is no longer a legendary tight end for the Patriots. He's now a former tight end charged with murder. The Globe's Dan Shaughnessy will tell us whether we should have seen this coming. Then the holder of what must be the most thankless job in Massachusetts, the Registrar of Motor Vehicles, Rachel Caprillion. She'll join us to answer all your questions and ours. And then Adam Riley will describe in detail Whitey's expletive-laced meltdown in the courtroom.
Christopher Lydon joins us to examine our new fascination with and fear of zombies. Karen Miller looks at how big data is revolutionizing our lives. No more, I've fallen and I can't get up. You know why, Jim? Because big data will predict our falls. All that coming up next, 89.7 WGBH. Stay tuned. I am Marjorie Eakin. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Hey, Jim.
Hey there, Marjorie. So, led out of his house in handcuffs in the morning, released by the Patriots shortly thereafter, then just after 2 o'clock, former Patriot star Aaron Hernandez, you saw it, charged with murder. Here to discuss this surreal story is great sports columnist for the Boston Globe. His most recent book, co-authored with the former Red Sox manager, is called Francona, The Red Sox Years. It is terrific. Welcome to Boston Public Radio, Dan Shaughnessy.
Hey, Jim and Marjorie.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for being with us. You know, Dan, the Patriots called the release of Hernandez simply the right thing to do. In your terrific column this morning, you said it was the only thing to do. And I think you were implying there that the Patriots organization might be a little bit too self-congratulatory here. Why do you think that?
Absolutely, that last line offended me. I mean, it's just, this is not the time to be pointing out that the Patriot way or that they do things differently or they're somehow separated from all the other teams in the NFL who are out to win professional football. That's what it's about. The sanctimoniousness has always just bothered me about their ability, their insistence on separating themselves as somehow operating on a higher plane. And of course they released him, and of course it was the right thing to do, and it was, of course, the only thing to do. But don't pat yourself on the back for doing that.
Well, your great line in your piece this morning is the Patriot way has become a sickening parody of its own mythical origins. New England's front office needs to stop with a self-congratulation. Should it have been called all along the Myra way, named after Myra Kraft, the late wife of Bob Kraft? Because the story we all tell, almost without thinking, is obviously Christian Peter. What was he, from Nebraska? He's drafted. They cut him before he even plays, thus proving in the 1990s what high moral plane the Patriots operated on. And that was all Myra Kraft, right?
Well, certainly she was a big part of that and a legitimate saint in every way, and no one would ever dispute that. And to his credit, the coach of the team, Bill Belichick, say what you want, he has never positioned himself as some sort of sculptor of souls or molder of young men. I mean, he's a football coach. He's into winning games. He does not take that posture. I think it bothers him a little bit, and it's just kind of grown over the years, and certainly those of us in the media have played into that as well. They're a football team. They haven't won a Super Bowl in 8 years now, and that's okay. But they need to just understand that we understand they're in the business of trying to win games, and basically they'll take anybody who will help them win.
Well, Dan Shaughnessy, maybe it's the mother in me, but sometimes I think we need some of these guys to be more of sculptor of souls, because Hernandez is 23. They knew he had some issues coming in. A lot of guys that play for the NFL and the NBA have issues coming into professional sports. Maybe they do need some babysitting. Maybe they do it, and I just don't know about it.
Well, they certainly have programs where they instruct players on the temptations, and you know, you have a lot of money and fame and notoriety right out of the jump here. That goes on. But people, it's difficult. We do it. We spoil our own kids. When you've been told you're special since you're 12 years old, no one ever says no to you. There's certainly a sense of entitlement. The young athletes certainly play into that. It's standard. And the Patriots, they are about winning games. They're not a redemption center for you know, lost souls.
Yeah.
I mean, a place where they're trying to win games. The reason they drafted him when others wouldn't was they thought he could help them win, and he did that for 3 years. Then, amazingly, they gave him a bag of money, $40 million, when they're kicking Wes Welker to the curb. And that just makes me question the judgment down there and what that was about. He's a very young guy, and there's so much coming out now about, you know, alleged gang-related activity, other shootings. It's just, why did you make that choice to reward this guy?
What do we know or that they knew Dan Shaughnessy? I mean, the reports, one of your colleagues in the Globe wrote about what some of the other scouts had written about Hernandez at the time that he dropped in the draft to whatever it was, the fourth round, that it wasn't just marijuana, he ran with a bad crowd. There might have been some shooting thing, as you say.
They know everything, Jim. They know everything. So, they do background checks like nobody's business.
Well, so wait a second. Most recently, did they know about this lawsuit and this alleged shooting in Orlando where the guy lost his eye in February?
It was February 13th. I can't state for a fact that they know that. I also, it strains all believability that they didn't.
Lost his eyeball in the shooting, allegedly.
But Dan, you know, getting back to what Marjorie said a minute ago, we're talking to Dan Shaughnessy from the Globe. It isn't. I'm not looking at it like they have some moral obligation to make sure that an Aaron Hernandez, the generic Aaron Hernandez is babysat. But if they want to protect their investment, and a guy's got a sketchy background like that, why are they not all over these young players trying to ensure that they don't become what they once were, and then even worse?
Well, that's what's alarming about the Hernandez situation in particular, is that the contract, the press conference was 9 months ago, and if you go back and look at the sound bites, they're astonishing. I mean, Aaron Hernandez talks about now he's on the road to making good decisions, no longer the bad stuff, he's bought into the Patriot way, and Bob Kraft makes a reference to, you know, in the old days when I was a young guy, seeing all these tattoos, I might have thought, you know, he was kind of a thug, but I don't think that way anymore. And you know, he gave $50,000 to the Myra Foundation after we gave him $40 million. You know, it was just, in retrospect, the whole thing's preposterous, but it was a feel-good moment at the time. And again, I believe they know everything about everything. I mean, they're recording us, so we ask questions down there in the room. Yes, they are. There's a camera on us when we're asking questions, yes.
Oh, that's Dan Shaughnessy. That's kind of creepy.
I usually wave to the thing. Yeah.
And then they send it to Edward Snowden in Moscow to make sure that they've
Wait a minute. Is that unusual? I mean, do all pro sports teams do that when they're having their press conferences, or is that unique to the Patriots as far as you know?
Well, it's certainly I've not seen it in the other team rooms in our town, but it's certainly probably an NFL thing, and they run that like the Pentagon down there anyway. It's just a very self-important, serious place, and everything is monitored.
Dan Shaughnessy, what does this do? Does this change the way the Patriots and other pro teams do business, or will they just see this as an unfortunate aberration? How's this going to impact on practices going forward?
Well, again, this is not a precedent for the NFL, you know. Ray Carruth is in jail for murdering his wife and pregnant child, and Ray Lewis was up for murder and, you know, pled out. O.J. Simpson, we don't even have to go there. But I think that look up the NFL. It's like 30 guys since February, some sort of felony charge. It's really 30
guys since the Super Bowl of this year.
Look, I'm telling you, look it up. There's another one in the paper today. This is not a random activity in the NFL. I think it's, and felony might be a stretch, I think 3% of the league has been arrested since the Super Bowl.
So wait a second.
Wow.
So the moral of that story, or the message of that story, is they really don't care. As long as the TV ratings are high and as long as people keep buying their paraphernalia, they don't care?
Well, I think they care. They care about keeping this thing going. And I mean, they've got the whole concussion issue. And this is the best television show in America. And it's fantasy football, and it's betting, and it's America's pastime. And people love their football. They want their football. And this is like the old, you know, you don't want to know how they make the sausages. You just want to eat the sausages.
You know, I am naive, I guess. We have this conversation in the wintertime when March Madness is coming forward. You look at all these great basketball players, and they never get out of college, and they're, I don't know what they do because they don't make the NBA, so they go back home to their crummy neighborhoods, and who knows what they do. But it just seems to me, God, if you can spend $40 million on a guy, maybe part of the quid pro quo is you put aside $1 million for a shrink or a therapist or a social worker or something.
Well, yeah, there's 53 guys on the roster, and there's a lot of activity. They're young men. They have a lot of money. They're high profile. It's a very large gun culture. There's a lot of, you know, weapon carrying people in the league, and this is a problem. This is the NFL today.
Two last things from me, Dan Shaughnessy. One, I'm assuming Bill Belichick will never answer a question about this. I assume he'll say, "I only talk about players on the Patriots." End of discussion. Is that a fair statement?
You can be pretty sure of that, Jim. Bill, today, if we said it's today Thursday, he would say it traditionally follows Wednesday.
So what is this
due to? Unbelievable.
What is this due to the reputation, if anything, of, as we call him here, Mr. Kraft? What does it do to Bob Kraft's image?
I think they're shaken. There's no question about it. This is a very serious issue, and they look like fools from 9 months ago. And it definitely shakes the judgments. And I think that there's been some erratic behavior at the top in the last couple of years. And, you know, I think that this is a great franchise. It's had great ownership. It's had great success. And it's hard to sustain that. And I just think they're a little bit of a critical mass down there.
Yeah. Is the erratic behavior you're talking about what I've seen on the back page of the names and faces in the Globe, all those pictures with the guy that owns the place? Is that what you're talking about, Dan Shaughnessy?
You've seen the videos.
Yeah, I've seen the videos. So one last question for me, Dan Shaughnessy. Is there something that I feel almost when you read these stories and about these, and they are young men, 21, 22, 23, often not with great backgrounds. I mean, Hernandez came from a tough situation at home. Is there anything to change this that we should be doing, or do we just say, hey, that's the way it is? They're a bunch of thugs and they're great athletes, and just watch the game and don't worry about it.
I you know, people who play these sports are very gifted, and they in many cases come from, you know, desperate environments.
Right.
Hernandez did not. His mother's an elementary school teacher. His brother teaches, I believe, coaches at Brown. And Bristol, Connecticut is not the mean streets of Dorchester.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just thought about the father dying, but maybe I'm making too much about the father dying.
I mean, a lot of us lose dads at a young age,
yep.
and that's unfortunate.
Right.
But he does not fit the mold of what you would of a gang guy. He does not fall into that peg at all.
Dick, great point. Dan Shaughnessy from the Globe, great new, well, in the recent, most recent book, co-author with the former Red Sox manager, Frank Kona, The Red Sox Years. Dan, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Good talk to you guys.
Thanks, Dan.
So did he say 3% are felons? Here's the question for you all at 877-301-8970. With our pro sports obsession here in New England, will this all be a blip on the screen for us, just like Dan says it'll be for the Patriots and the league as a whole? Are we enablers when we continue, Marjorie, to buy the shirts for $85, tailgate at Gillette? Are we part of the problem? 877-301-8970. We're obviously talking about Hernandez, and you know at 2 o'clock this afternoon, his bail will be re-looked at Fall River Superior Court.
Well, you know what the funny thing is? I mean, Dan's got this great question in his column today when he says, what do you tell your 10-year-old son for whom you bought the Hernandez T-shirt and shirt? By the way, those shirts like are about $60
I just said, it's like $85, $90. Yeah,
the
real ones, the real deals.
Yeah, they're a lot of money. What do you tell your kid? But I guess to those of us who are sort of fair-weather sports friends who tune in, you know, when the Patriots are really doing well or the Celtics are really doing well, I knew they were bad actors. I certainly didn't know that 3% of these people have gotten in trouble. Did you say since the Super Bowl?
No, he was. I think the number he said. No, Stan. No. 30 people have allegedly been arrested. Not all for felonies since the Super Bowl. And I think the number he gave us is approximately 3% of the players in the NFL are felons.
And that's probably not a huge number because probably when you look at who are criminals, I mean, there's probably a good percentage of people in America that are criminals. Period. But I guess there's something about the money. You know, if you have all that money and the Patriots are able to give them all that money, it just does seem to me there should be more than just a program to tell you how to spend your money or not spend your money or the pitfalls to watch out for. There should be something else because they're so young.
Yeah, but that's them. I'm not even worried about the Patriots anymore. I think Dan disposed of them quite well. I think
I'm
the issue is us.
Them.
Are we enablers for the teams? And we are. The bottom line is if you can hit a home run, if you can catch a touchdown or throw a touchdown pass, I think the vast majority of people don't give a you-know-what about what you've done off the field.
Paul from Milton says the NFL has become nothing more than a gladiator blood sport waiting for them to bring in the Christians and the Lions.
877-301-8970. What's your take on this? Are we part of the problem? I think the answer is yes. I mean, no one's going to stop watching this. Everybody likes to think that Aaron Hernandez is the aberration, even though he made a great point. There's another guy, that guy Ray Carruth or whatever his name is.
Ray Carruth.
Who's in jail.
Carolina Panthers.
The guy from the Ravens, Ray Lewis, who just retires a hero after being involved at least and testifying in another case that involved the end of somebody's life. 877-301-8970 is our number.
Stephen is making a joke about IRS spying on us. He says, the NFL says the problem is limited to a few low-level players in Cincinnati.
Let's go to Lewis in Canton. You're next on Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Thank you for the call, Lewis.
Hi, guys. Love
hey.
The show.
Thanks.
Long time listener.
Thank you. Thank you.
One thing that comes to mind is how we just clearly miss the whole perspective of treating this as a job. And, you know, these NFL players, as talented as they are, you know, we, you know, love to watch them every Sunday. But the problem is that we find it that it's okay for these guys to become repeat offenders and have all these criminal records and yet be able to still make millions and it's still okay to go out and kind of glorify what they kind of do.
That's, I think it's a perfect description. We glorify what they do and we forgive most things that they do off the playing field or off the court. I think that says it perfectly. Lewis, thank you for the call. And I also like that Shaughnessy said, you know, stop with the self-congratulations. There's not a Patriot way. The Patriot way is you get the best players who can score the most touchdowns or defend against the pass so that you have a chance of winning a Super Bowl. That's the bottom line. Anybody else who says other is completely full of it.
Paul from Milton, what do you think about Hernandez, Paul?
I'm not surprised. I place the blame more on the colleges and universities who push these guys through for 4 years with basically no education. As long as they can fill the stands and fill the coffers of the universities, they could care less what their GPA is, their, you know, the grade point average. And this Hernandez went to, what, Florida State? Or
Florida.
Went
to, he went to Florida.
Florida, okay. I mean, you know, a lot of these are just, you know, football mills.
Well, in all fairness, Florida also produced Tim Tebow, I should say.
But you know, Paul, we go through this every year at March Madness, where there's a lot of schools, interesting, a lot of the Catholic schools, which is a good thing for the much maligned Catholic Church, Georgetown's, the Fordham is not exactly a big powerhouse, but Boston College, mm-hmm. they have a pretty good graduation rate. So there are some schools yeah. that are paying attention to these kids and not just pumping them through. So you can do it. Boston College is a big powerhouse, and in basketball, Georgetown is.
Well, but I think during those 4 years, they should start then to have an acculturation, if that's the right word.
Yeah, but Paul, let me interrupt. You know how they treat these players differently? And we've had this, Derek Jackson, who does the great thing that Marjorie was describing in the Globe every year, where he does the brackets,
yes.
not based upon your winning records of the 66 teams or whatever they are, but based upon the graduation rate, particularly of black players, and this is in college basketball. If you don't have a graduation rate of X, whatever it is, 60%, 70%, you say to the school, you can't play. And you know what's going to happen if they do that? They're going to start taking care of these kids in every sort of way. Now there's no incentive to graduate them. There's no incentive to treat them in any way except as pieces of meat who, you're right, who then the lucky few, maybe the 1 or 2% go on in the pros, and then they get their $40 million contracts, yeah. and in the case of one of them, do pretty horrible things, allegedly.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, in that 4 years, there should be some course on how to deal with both failure and success.
I agree with you.
Success is harder to deal with than failure.
I agree with you. Paul, thanks for the call as always.
We get a great email. I don't get the email address enough. It's bpr@wgbh.org from Mike in Foxborough, where, of course, the Patriots play. He says, talent makes people overlook a lot of foibles. Look at my field, finance. Gifted bankers who are morally bankrupt are still compensated according to their virtues with no regard to their vices. That's a great point.
Perfect.
So what he's basically saying, it's all about the money. You know, if
you're a master of the universe in whatever field you're in, you forgive everything.
And you can make a lot of money for the corporation, whether it's Goldman Sachs, the New England Patriots, then we overlook your character. Let's go to Brian in Boston. What do you think, Brian?
Hi, good afternoon.
And to you.
You know, I think obviously this is a horrible thing, but at the same time, I think a lot of the sports writers, are using this as a way to settle old scores with, the Krafts and with Belichick and things like that. And I think that's really untoward.
Why is it? Why don't you think they deserve the criticism? Because I'm not a sports writer. I completely agree with what Dan Shaughnessy and others have said. You know, you reap what you sow, essentially.
Well, you take
a high-risk player, you pay him $40 million, you don't attend to him except in the weight room and on the field, and this is one of the things that happens.
Well, Jim, a couple of years ago, the Red Sox got killed because they hired a private eye to track Carl Crawford before he signed him.
Right.
Now, I mean, which is, you can't have it both ways, but the sports writers can. I mean, so.
And Brian, I can give you an example, but you didn't need a private detective like was hired apparently in the Crawford case, who's now with LA, I guess.
Well, why?
All you got to do is read the scouting reports. If you Google in the Globe and the Herald, the scouting reports told you that this was a very risky proposition, Aaron Hernandez, not a potential murderer, but a guy who had gang involvement, was using marijuana repeatedly in his mid-teens.
Well, I mean, you guys are calling for the legalization of marijuana 2 days a week.
Not for 15-year-olds, we're not, Brian,
well,
actually.
I don't know. I just think it's, you know, I think it's a way for, you know, people
to
settle grudges. And
we hear you. By the way, you're not alone in that. Brian, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Let's take one more if we can.
Let's go to Ivan in Western Massachusetts. Hi, Ivan.
How you doing? I'm actually from Western. Jim and Marjorie, how you doing?
Good. Excellent. How are you, Ivan? Thanks for calling.
First time calling. Well, I just want to say I'm really disgusted. Here's a man, and I'm speaking from a former felon, rehabilitated Christian. This guy was a role model. I mean, it's a possible role model for Latinos across America. And to be mixed up in such a charge of first-degree murder, I mean, it's disgusting. This guy had the opportunity of a lifetime that people would kill for, to join an organization like the Patriots, and he just threw it all away.
Right, and by the way, when you say, Ivan, I'm so glad you called, and it's a great first call. People are going to say, and some of these athletes say, remember when Charles Barkley said, I ain't no role model? The reality is they are. Professional athletes are role models. You're right, Ivan.
Of course. I mean, my kids look up to Aaron Hernandez. I mean, it's like they can't believe it's happening. They don't want it to be true. In the other case, I want them to put him under the jail. I mean, this guy is disgusting. I'm disgusted with the guy.
Yeah,
Ivan, great first call. Thank you very much
great,
for making
it's a great
it. We appreciate
point. We got an email from Sheila wondering if steroid use will come into play, and that's a great question, too.
Well, you know what someone said upstairs we may hear also, and this is pure conjecture, is, you know, we have talked many a time to Chris Nowinski and Dr. Cantu from BU who work on the concussions that a lot of pro athletes have. Who knows what kind of cockamamie defense is going to come.
Usually the concussion repercussions are not so soon in your career. He's only 23.
I hear you, but the guy's charged with murder. We shall see.
Okay, when we come back, it is time for our weekly feature, Ask Thee. Today's guest is Rachel Caprillion, the Massachusetts Registrar of Motor Vehicles Head. You know how we love the Registry of Motor Vehicles. Well, she's going to take your calls at 877-301-8970. That is next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
The 4th of July means cookouts, fireworks, and the Boston Pops. I'm Pops conductor Keith Lockhart.
And I'm Laura Carlo from WGBH's sister station, WCRB. Join us for the Boston Pops Fireworks Spectacular.
Brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance, auto, home, life, and business insurance from a company as responsible as you are.
July 4th at 7 o'clock here on 89.7 WGBH.
WGBH programs exist because of you. And Grogan & Company, fine art auctioneers, assisting New England families with the sale of their fine art, antiques, silver, and jewelry since 1988. Located in historic Dedham, Massachusetts, and at GroganCO.com. And Subaru of New England, offering the all-new redesigned Subaru Forester with symmetrical all-wheel drive. More information available online at SubaruofNewEngland.com.
You know that public broadcasting takes you on a journey. The only question is, how fast will you get there? Today, Boston Public Radio is joining every WGBH station, every WGBH program to set a new one-day fundraising speed record. $150,000 in a single day, or just above 6,000 DPH. That means dollars per hour. Right now on Boston Public Radio, every gift in any amount is being matched dollar for dollar by Ralph Lauren Society members Maureen and Mike Rutgers. Call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at wgbhnews.org.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. I am Jim Browdy, along with Marjorie Egan. We're in the middle of the most important fundraiser yet for WGBH, but today is a very special part of the campaign, and pretty exciting, I should say. WGBH has a chance to break a new one-day fundraising speed record, And it's not a moment too soon because GBH's fiscal year now ends in June 30th, just I think 3 days from now. On top of that, there's also a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. Help make fundraising history right now with Mora's Kim Saltmarsh. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Jim. Thank you so much. So I'm just going to be honest with you. When we woke up this morning, this station was not where it needed to be. This station was behind in terms of where it needed to be with this fundraiser. So we said, you know what? We got to keep the station on track. And right now, we're going to have a one-day fundraising speed record to make the money that we need. So we need your help. As an added incentive, there is that dollar-for-dollar match. So whatever you give is going to be doubled. This is the time to contribute. If you're thinking about contributing to public radio, you love the Jim and Marjorie Show, you love Boston Public Radio, now is the time to do it. You've got that one-day speeding record you're going to break. Your gift is going to be doubled. Now's the time. 888-897-9424 is the number to call. You can also contribute online at WGBHnews.org.
I mean, it is really neat, Kim, that when you support Boston Public Radio right now, your contribution is going to go twice as far because there's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. So what that means, again, it's a very practical time to do your part because if you contribute $20 a month, that's worth $40 a month. $50 a month is worth $100 a month all throughout the year. And think about those bigger gifts. $1,000 is worth $2,000 for your community through public broadcasting. Again, the number 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
You know, Marjorie and Kim, Morning Edition reporter on the deforestation battle going on in Indonesia recently. Reporter Anthony Kuhn traveled to Jakarta, told the story of how one paper company was convinced to change its policies. This is the kind of place where public radio takes you. So if you value global awareness, if you want your community to stay connected to these kinds of stories, both locally and overseas, then please do your part to keep public broadcasting on the air.
Okay, here's the deal. I've got another incentive for you to give. You may look outside, you may be outside. Not the best beach day, but I swear the beach weather is coming. Now, today only on Boston Public Radio, when you support Boston Public Radio, you're going to get a thank you gift. With a gift of $104, WGBH is going to say thanks with, get ready for it, the WGBH Beach Kit. So what's in the kit? We've got an official WGBH towel. It's pretty cool. An official WGBH stainless steel water bottle, because you can't have enough of those. And, of course, an official WGBH gym bag. So show off your support of Boston Public Radio wherever you go this summer. You call 888-897-9424 or you give online at WGBHnews.org.
Okay, again, take a moment to call 888-897-9424 or give online securely at WGBHnews.org. It is the most important fundraiser here for Boston Public Radio for the whole year, and WGBH is looking to break a new one-day fundraising speed record. Wouldn't that be neat, Jim, if you could break that record? So that's thanks to the Ralph Lowell Society members Maureen and Mike Rutgers, who are agreeing to match every gift dollar for dollar. This won't happen without you, so please join this historic day. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org, and thanks.
Think about the best thing you heard on public radio this year. Maybe you heard a report.
She's been the general manager of the MBTA, Beverly
Who was interviewing someone.
It's a pleasure, absolutely.
There was probably also a producer in the next room calling the shots.
We've got our next guest on the line.
And an engineer running the board.
Can I get a mic check, please? Sounds
then
good.
There's a whole staff of people doing research, taking care of the details, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and the folks up at Great Blue Hill making sure the antenna works. And last, but certainly not least, there's a community of listeners all across New England.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
And beyond.
Hello.
In other words, no one does public radio alone. And in that spirit, right now, other WGBH supporters are agreeing to match your gift in any amount, dollar for dollar, but only for a limited time. So please call 888-897-9424. The match also works when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Okay, Marjorie, you have two choices.
Mm-hmm.
You can be waterboarded at Guantanamo, or you can be appointed registrar of motor vehicles in Massachusetts. Which would you choose? Well, our guest made a surprising choice. She's here to answer your questions. She is the registrar of motor vehicles, Rachel Kapilian. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Jim.
Hello,
start off
Rachel.
It's
up
true,
that
right?
Way.
I mean, it's
it
true.
It is a fact. I mean, you know, here you are. You're a lovely woman. I've met you before. You're doing a good job. I go into the registry, and I see your picture next to Deval Patrick. And, you know, there are times I've just wanted to leap in and just attack the picture. I mean, people get really upset about the registry of motor vehicles, even though, I must say, it is a lot better now. But it is a thankless job, is it not? He's right.
It's not a thankless job.
It's not?
I wouldn't be doing it if it were a thankless job. I mean, it is a job that has its challenges,
yeah,
for sure. You definitely have issues that you need to quell and things that you need, ways you need to change the way you do business so people don't find it as unpleasant as has been described. But for the most part, I think we leave our customers better than we found them. They end up getting their transaction done and they're glad for it. Most of the time, mm-hmm, they're doing that transaction online.
I want to talk about that. I love that. Our number, by the way, if you want to speak to the registrar, ask her a question. It's 877-301-8970. She'll be with us at the top of the hour. I want to say, personal experience, I've been to the Watertown Registry a couple times, and I've complained a lot in the past. Two times in the last year, the people could not have been nicer. Even one time when the wait was an extra couple of minutes, I loved, you know, where you're always talking to Rich Davey when he's here, Secretary of Transportation. Mm-hmm. You want to know when the train's coming. You have a number. You know where your place is in line.
That's
you
very
know
important.
Roughly how much.
That is
so,
very
I mean,
important.
It's, the reality is it's a tough deal, but I think it's as consumer friendly as it's been in years.
Well, you just mentioned Rachel Kapilian, the online operation there. Mm-hmm. I am now in a panic because I learned that there's these fake RMV license renewal sites, because that's where you do a lot of your business. You pay your tickets, you know, your parking tickets, mm-hmm, and sometimes it's individual towns, and you get your, you know, renewals of licenses, et cetera. How do we avoid these scam sites so we're not paying our license to somebody that's living in East Overshoe stealing our money?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. And we do have these mimic sites that seem to pop up and they get more and more sophisticated. That said, it is a small fraction of the kinds of, you know, complaints that we get. Most people get to our website without any trouble and get their transaction done and confirmed.
You have a new address, don't you, speaking of site? Do you have a new address? Is it MassRMV? Or
yes, a new web address.
That's
yes,
what I meant. MassRMV.what?
MassRMV. And we changed that address because is now a .com as opposed to a .org to make that distinction, because we are now accepting advertisements.
Oh, really?
To defray some of our other costs. Yes, it's the most visited website in the state.
So what are the rules on who can advertise and who can't? I mean, there's got to be something kosher.
Hold on.
And what?
What do you advertise on
the
site? Mufflers?
There's different types. A lot of it is auto-related.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. So someone going to an RMV website is probably
tires.
A driver.
Yeah.
You know? So that's some of the advertisers. But it isn't limited to them. But we do not accept advertisements for those industries that we regulate. And this is all done through mass.legal, and they determine what are okay to advertise and which ones aren't.
Now, Rachel, you said if we had you on the show today, I spoke to you the other day, you said you would give me a low license number. Is that what you said?
Oh, I have no recollection of such a conversation.
Now, but you are doing another one of those low number license. People are obsessed with this.
They really are. They are obsessed with it. There is a whole swath of the population that think in low number license plates. They know who has them because at some point it is like sort of revealed. If you have plate number 5, everybody knows who plate number 5 holder is.
Who has one?
It is the same family. I don't think it has been publicized.
Yeah, I know that.
But it has been in the same family since the plate was issued.
So what's the lowest number that's available in this next lottery deal?
I think I haven't seen them all, but I think that we usually have at least one two-digit. We haven't in every year, so I think that there'll be one two-digit.
And by the way,
that's the whole thing. A two-character, I should say.
So you can keep it, obviously, from generation to generation,
yeah,
if you want to.
Yeah, families can pass it down. I mean, I have been named in probate.
Divorces?
I've never had to go. Not divorces, more like one sibling
states?
Says, Dad promised me the low number plate. No, he promised it to me. And
God.
It's been, you know, I've never had to go. We
and
usually
the deal
just
on...
send our policy forward, and that seems to suffice.
The deal on that, I think once I remember you guys, I think when you were head of the registry, was done to raise money for charity. But
yes.
The lottery now is just a lottery, right?
Well, they're two different things. Like, one is the specialty plates, like the Cape and the Islands.
Yeah.
That is a charitable organization, mm-hmm, and they are able, as that organization, to raffle off their license plates to the highest bidder. And that one, I think the highest bidder for Cape Cod Plate 1 went for, I think it's $150,000 or
$160,000.
Wow. So it's real money, and it's a good cause. Now, the regular standard issue plates that we do, that is done strict lottery. You do not have to be rich. You can apply like anybody else, and your odds are pretty good. It's a heck of a lot better than the real lottery.
So what's the most – we're going to get to your calls in a minute at 877-301-8970. The line's filled up in about a nanosecond, I should say. Rachel, what's the most common complaint you deal with?
At the registry overall?
Yeah.
I would say it's about some kind of wait time, whether it be, in line or at, it depends on sort of the day. I mean, our average wait time is an average. If you go to North Adams, you'll never have a wait. If you're in Watertown, the second busiest branch in the state, you will have some wait. So usually it's about something related to that. But that said, we've come down, considerably over the years, and we're taking more and more people out of the branch, out of that stream, by putting those transactions online.
What percentage of all transactions with the registry are online these days?
We're running about 3.8 million transactions online versus about 3.1 million branch visits.
So there's more.
Now, a branch
online.
Visit might be more than one
Understood.
Transaction, so it's not exactly apples to apples, but it's pretty darn good. When I walked in the door 5 years ago, 1.5 million transactions online, and now we've more than doubled that.
Let's go to Gary in Medfield. What's your question for the registrar, Gary?
Hey, I'm curious. How is it that people who don't have driver's licenses can register vehicles?
Well, that was just tightened up by the legislature. That used to be called X registrations. You now have to show proof of residency. You can't and a license number or a valid Social Security number.
Oh, so this was an illegal a person here illegally, Gary? Was that what that was about? They were registering cars and they weren't here legally?
Well, you can be illegal or you can just not have a driver's license and you can still register a vehicle and put it on the road.
Wow.
Wasn't there some public issue that led to the change?
It was about residency mostly. Okay. That you are indeed, a Massachusetts resident and you live here and you can register your vehicle. I think the thinking behind that, it's been on the books for decades, is that, the grandmother who wants to, buy a car or register a car for her grandson to drive around because she's not licensed. So there are a whole population other than, someone else for some other reason that doesn't have a license.
Gary,
we want to know who these
call.
People are and make sure they're insured.
Understood.
John from Sturbridge, what's your question for the registrar?
Hi. I'm in my 50s. I've had a motorcycle license since I was 17. And recently I stopped at a bike dealership to look at a new bike. And he told me I couldn't take it for a ride because I only had a car license and not a bike license. So what evidently has happened is when I went down to renew my license at some point, someone evidently made a mistake and didn't put a letter for the motorcycle. And so I've been driving a motorcycle illegally, evidently, which I didn't know. And I'm wondering how I can get that rectified.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to leave your name with the producer, I'll make sure you get to a branch and you have a license reissued. That was just, sounds like that was just a clerical mistake, but
That's
you are
I
correct.
Think, yes.
It's a Class D and a Class M, so it's a DM, which means you can drive both. And you say bike. Now, when you're talking with the registrar, you have to be more specific. Not a bike. Not a motorcycle and a bike to me are not the same. So a motorcycle.
John, don't hang up. One of our producers will take your number. Speaking of that, by the way, we'll get to as many calls as we can in a couple of minutes. Is there an email address? How does one communicate questions if they don't get you on the radio, for example?
We have a feedback line.
What's that?
You can find that from our website, and that's just if you have a question. And we're going to be instituting a chat function on our main phone line. So all the ways to communicate with the RMV, I would advise you to go to our website, www.massrmv.com.
Why
and it has
laughing?
All the other phone numbers.
Because Art sent us an email. He wants to know if the key advertisers for the RMV website are aspirin, Tylenol, Excedrin, and Valium. Although he says, to be fair, Brockton, where he used to go, was worse before Rachel Caprillion started. Well, so there you go.
We're doing great in Brockton. We got a really low average going on right now. Brockton is rocking. Hey, that was a little rhyming that I did.
Brockton is rocking. Okay, when we get back, we're going to take as many of your calls as we can squeeze in for Rachel Caprillion, the registrar of motor vehicles. Are you the registrix? Maybe you should be the registrar.
I think statute says registrar, but it does say he. So that's another change for the legislature to make. It is an outrage.
Stay tuned for more with Rachel Caprillion following this brief break.
I'm Philip Martin. I live here, and I report here.
Without ever knowing it, you've driven the same routes, passed the same landmarks, and used the same rest stops as today's human trafficking networks.
I think I'm always in reporter mode.
Who's orchestrating this trafficking network from New York to New England?
And it's so important to be aware of the things that are going on in our life and to incorporate that into journalism.
Philip Martin, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
This program is made possible thanks to you. and the Museum of Science, where you can uncover a portal to ancient times at the new Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit. See what life was really like over 2,000 years ago. More information at mos.org. And great performances. Escape to the Berkshires for one of the world's most beloved music festivals, featuring James Taylor and Yo-Yo Ma. The Tanglewood 75th Anniversary Celebration, Friday at 8:30 on WGBH2.
Ever have one of those days where you had so much to do, you kind of wish there were two of you? Well, on Boston Public Radio, your wish has been granted, because when you support WGBH right now, other supporters will double the impact of your gift. There's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. That means your gift of $10 a month becomes $20, your $100 gift becomes $200, and so on and so on. But it won't last long, so take advantage of this match and call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at wgbhnews.org.
That's right. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org. This is Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. And today you could be part of fundraising history. We're in the middle of the most important fundraiser of the year for WGBH. And today we're looking to break a new one-day fundraising speed record. WGBH is hoping to raise $150,000 today, but we really, really need your help to get there. And to sweeten the deal, there's a dollar for dollar match in effect right now. I'm Marjorie Egan. I'm here with Jim Browdy, and here with us is Kim Saltmarsh.
Marjorie, thank you so much. Yeah, I just want to remind you that it is the last chance to have your gifts matched during Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. So if you love Jim and Marjorie, you love Boston Public Radio, now is the day to do it. Why would you wait? Because it is your last chance to have that gift doubled. The match, again, goes until 7 p.m. today, but it's the last match of the drive. So if you're going to give, now is the time. Again, we have a fundraising record that we're trying to break in one day today. We can get there with your help. Here's how you can help. 888-897-9424, or you can always give online. Have that gift matched at wgbhnews.org.
Hey, Marjorie, what did she mean when she said, if you love Jim and Marjorie?
That's right. That shouldn't be conditional, Jim.
Now, it's a great time to support Boston Public Radio, because as you heard, there's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. That means your gift will go obviously twice as far, thanks to other WGBH supporters who understand the importance of public broadcasting, as do you. So let's break that down. You give $50 right now, it counts as $100. $200 becomes $400. So why wait? Have your gift double when you call 888-897-9424. The match also works when you give online at wgbhnews.org.
My turn.
Okay. It is.
Support Boston Public Radio today with a gift in any amount, and you're going to automatically be entered to win a trip for two. Listen to this. To Rome or Paris or London or Istanbul, your choice, courtesy of Rick Steves Europe. You can make a wish by the Trevi Fountain. You can explore the Colosseum and the Catacombs. Lose yourself in the majesty of the Sistine Chapel and the Pantheon. You'll even get a cooking demonstration from one of Italy's top chefs, plus six nights accommodations, transportation, and more. Unbelievable great deal. 888-897-9424 or give online wgbhnews.org.
It really is a great deal. So not only are you going to be entered to win a contest to potentially go to Europe, really exciting, not only is your gift going to be matched dollar for dollar, not only are you helping break a one-day record, but you could also walk away with a thank you gift. We like to thank people for contributing. We have a special one today only when you help Boston Public Radio set this one-day fundraising speed record with a gift of $104. We're going to say thanks with the WGBH Beach Kit. So what's in it? We've got an official WGBH towel. We've got a stainless steel water bottle, an official WGBH gym bag. It's an exciting offer. Show your support for Boston Public Radio and, of course, Jim and Marjorie. Wherever you go this summer, call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
You can make fundraising history with Boston Public Radio today during the most important fundraiser ever for WGBH. The number to call again is 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org. Don't forget, your gift today will be doubled thanks to Ralph Lowell Society members Maureen and Mike Rutgers. If you love programs like this one, if you love hearing stories you cannot find anywhere else, then please consider giving a gift in any amount to keep quality radio on the air in this community. Again, it's 888-897-9424 or online at wgbhnews.org, and we thank you.
WGBH is attempting to set a fundraising speed record
That means every WGBH station is coming together to raise $150,000 in just one day. $6,250 an hour, or $104 a minute. So take a minute to support Boston Public Radio with a gift of $104 right now. And today only, WGBH will say thanks with the WGBH Beach Kit. It comes complete with a beach towel, a stainless steel water bottle, and a sturdy gym bag. And it's a great way to show off your support of WGBH. Call 888-897-9424 or do your part online at WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie. And we are rejoined by, I think, officially the state's top masochist. That would be the registrar. It's true, Rachel. I don't care what you say. The registrar of motor vehicles, Rachel Caprain. Rachel, before we get back to the calls, I read that the MassDOT, Department of Transportation, spending a ton of dough to upgrade the computer systems, is it? It's allegedly going to save money, going to make things faster. What's the deal with that?
Well, it's not just MassDOT. It's a Commonwealth investment.
Okay.
Our mainframe, called ALARS, Automated Licensing and Registration System, went into effect in the year 1986, the year I was a senior at Watertown High School. So, needless to say, it's been some time. You know, 27, 28 years go by, and it is COBOL-based. So if you comb some nursing homes, you might find people who know COBOL. So it is the best bang for the buck in terms of a computer system that the state's probably
Tell me
ever
what
had.
It's going to mean for me.
It's going to mean for you is you're going to be able to intersect with the registry far easier, far quicker, and far more efficiently. Not just us. It's going to be lots of other state agencies where we share the same kinds of, like licensing, for example. Like, if you're a poodle groomer or an electrician, you have a credential. We credential people. So we're going to be able to do sort of more with one-stop shopping.
Fair enough. Let's get back to the calls. Our number is 877-301-8970 with the Registrar of Motor Vehicles.
Let's go to Mike in Spencer. What's your question, Mike?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I had a situation where I bought an antique car out of state that didn't have a title.
Mm-hmm.
Fixed it all up, then couldn't get it titled here in Mass. I had jumped through hoops, had the car inspected by the police to prove it wasn't stolen, and could never get it inspected and had to sell it. I don't understand why the registry on a car that's 50 years old, 60 years old, would be turning down, in effect, fees, excise tax, registration fees, sales tax, inspection taxes, on a car that's proven not stolen without a title.
Well, how about a registrar?
Yeah, no, the titles, this is one of these really, really tricky areas. We have pretty strict rules, regulations, and laws that govern titling and owning of different kinds of vehicles and who owns it and its chain of custody, so to speak. And they're like two snowflakes. There are no two title issues that are exactly the same. So if you want to leave your name with the producer, I'll be happy to have someone reach out to you and figure out the specific situation.
Mike, stay on hold. They'll take your number in just a second. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
And these are complicated things. And you don't know what some of these vehicles even are. They started off as one thing and they turn into something else. So it's
Jill
not easy.
Has just sent an email that we can all relate to. She wants to know, what are some secrets for getting a decent photo on a license at the DMV?
What a good question.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing, if we don't have heavy wait times, we'll do a do-over.
I've had them do a do-over.
Yes,
when
we want
just
people
atrocious.
To smile. Some states don't want you to smile. They think it interferes with facial recognition, which is bunk.
Yeah.
So we want people to look good and feel good about their picture, because we don't want a new picture for 10 years, because that means you can renew on the 5-year renewal online.
Let me tell you the most humiliating experience. I was at the Watertown RMB maybe 2 months ago to renew my license. I had my picture taken, and the woman behind the counter looks at me, and she basically says, not in these words, "I think you want to take that again, sir." Totally. She said it in a really sweet way.
When your eyes are half closed,
oh,
or you look like
No, it looked like I could take a profile picture in a lineup is what it looked like. It wasn't her fault. It was me. I am what I am. Let's go to Eric in Roslindale. You're on with Rachel Caprillion, the Registrar of Motor Vehicles. Thanks for the call, Eric.
Thanks for having me. As you two know, I have two young sons, and
oh, hi,
the
Eric.
Most dangerous thing I do every day is cross the street with them, because you can't go 2 minutes without seeing someone running a red light or driving too fast or talking on the phone or texting. And so I am wondering why we can't have regular driving tests every 5 or 10 years or so to help ensure better public safety.
Eric, you are the man. Let me just say that. Go ahead. Take it away, Rachel Cabrillion.
Well, let me begin by saying that would be a change in legislation. So that would have to be a change in the law. So that it would be of the legislature to decide that. But I will tell you, from an administrative point of view, if I had to retest drivers, I would have to hire a whole lot more people to keep up with that kind of a demand. And, you know, certainly there are some states who do retests, and it is, you know, very much a matter of policy that, you know, I know has come up in the past.
Rachel, you know, and thanks for the call, Eric. You know that Marjorie and I think you know, were brutally attacked by the AARP a couple of years ago, because our view was, when the distracted driving law was passed, that older drivers should be tested X number of years. I believe, despite the changes that were made, what, 3 years ago was it? 3 years ago.
2010,
yeah. Yeah, 2010, the changes with texting and some modest changes in older drivers. If you get a license, what's the name of the state senator? Brian Joyce says this, mm-hmm. Who's on our side on this. If you get a license when you're 16 and a half and you're 100 years old, you will not have taken another driver's test in the intervening 84 years. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is accurate.
Does any state allow that besides us?
Yeah, there
are. I know
it's not
your doing. I know it's a legislature.
Yeah, no, there are lots of states who only have
really?
One driving test. Yeah, and it's, you know, it. Some people are very good drivers. Experience certainly counts for a lot.
But some aren't.
And, you know, there is a way to deal with that, and that's with law enforcement. And if you have, say, someone living next door to you who insists on driving and has lost, you know, skills such that they can't really drive anymore, you can always call the local police and say that, you know, so-and-so is a terrible driver. I see him crashing in his garage every other day. And they can take out that driver on what's called an immediate threat.
Oh, they can.
Yes, they can. And people need to realize that. And and it shouldn't be, you know, that shouldn't be something you do because, you know, they had one accident and you don't like the neighbor.
Okay.
I mean,
no,
they could have. But they do investigate it, and we deal with it.
Used that down the Cape. Remember when the gentleman called the police in August? This is from Brian Joyce, the state senator. This is a few years ago.
It's a true story. Plymouth.
Called the police, and he said he was stuck in a blizzard, and the police are
looking
at each other because they're thinking, it's August. There's no snow. There's no blizzard.
Yeah, there you go.
And they drive to the scene, and indeed the man is stuck in a sand trap.
That's
on
true,
some
on
golf
a golf course. In any case, let's go.
That's someone who should be on our immediate thread.
Yes.
Let's go to Sue and Nate. You're on with Rachel Cabrillion on Boston Public Radio. Hi there, Sue.
Hey, I completely agree about the elderly driver thing, in part so that it takes the onus off families. And
yes.
The amount of tension
yes.
that you're going to create for an old person if you have to do that immediate threat thing. I mean, Rachel's theory is that they come off the road and law enforcement helps, but why should we be incurring the overhead for law enforcement when, you know, it could be done a lot more gracefully? Oh, by the way, a few bad apples. So if you're good and you pass the test and you're 85, great, you pass the test.
I agree. Hey, Sue, the solution for that is to call 722-2000 and tell your state rep and senator to grow a you-know-what. But go ahead. What's your question for Rachel?
All right, I have one more. How come there's no provision to opt in, like I'll pay for the stamp or whatever it is, to get a letter before my license expires? We used to have that. We all loved it, and we'd like it back.
Yes, well, I appreciate that. And the good news is that is coming back.
It's
going
to
be in a different – well, it's not exactly in the same way. And we are always looking at sort of what happens, in the years since we stopped sending those automatic reminders. You can opt in, and by the time in November, we have a new phone system that's coming online. So you can go to our phone center, and there'll be like a prompt, like press 3 if you would like us to remind you when your license expires.
That's great, actually.
Yep.
That's great.
And then when we have our new ALAR system, as I've been talking about, we're going to have the ability for the first time to capture email. Because remember, in 1986, there was no such thing as email. So we're going to have the ability to capture email addresses, and it'll be an automatic notice.
Yeah, with lots of emails about that. It's a big cause for concern. People, I don't get why the big deal is. So it renews on your birthday.
It renews on your birthday.
Most people
every
remember
5 years.
Their birthday. But
well, how do you know? Sue, thanks for the call. The problem, and I've heard you respond to this mm-hmm. in other venues, Rachel, it's every 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not every birthday. So you say, well, it's not this birthday. Is it this one? Is it whatever?
I think, you know, if you're tortured by your picture, you know exactly when you can get rid of it, Jim. That's
I'm not even showing you my picture,
experience.
Marjorie. Let me
you
tell
always
you.
You get a duplicate, too. You have to pay for it, but
yeah.
You else can get one.
Eli from Stoughton, what's your question for the registrar?
Well, my question is this. On the 24th of this month, about 10 o'clock, my partner renewed his driver's license because it was already expired.
Yep.
And four times that he put in the credit card, and and the expiration date and sent it out. It was denied by the registry.
Okay.
So he tried again one more time with a donation for $52. It was denied again.
Okay, so you're on the right.
It's a credit card. She chose another credit card.
Eli, I can stop you. She knows the answer to your
question
already.
I know the answer.
Go ahead, Rachel.
And I'm very sad to report that it sounds like you went that your partner went to a mimic site.
One of the phony sites we're talking about.
Well, if it's a card charging $52, that's not one of our fees. It's
so did you hear that, Eli?
Yeah.
So what does he do about that? Call the Attorney General?
It's the Attorney General of Consumer Affairs. And they make us aware when there's an uptick, if there's a certain site that's getting more hits. Unfortunately, all we can do is really create awareness because these sites do exist.
How do
Don't
you know?
Do it from a search engine. Well,
how do you know if you're – I mean, that's the thing, that you're on the right site.
Well, if you have any doubt, you can go to mass.gov and there's a link to our site. Look for the state seal and look for fees. If it asks you for anything up front ever, that is not our site. Our fee is at the end of the transaction.
And Eli, you should call the Attorney General's consumer hotline. And I'm sorry I don't have it in front of us, but you can get it online.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me anyway.
So any other advice? We're wrapping up, Rachel Cabrini. What, any other advice for people based upon common issues that arise or that sort of thing? What should people know that they may not?
Well, I kind of give general advice. If you have a question about one of our rules and regulations, almost anything you want to know is available on our website. We can do most transactions online. So before you think to go to a branch or think you have to go to a branch, you might not have to. So, and if you need to go to a branch for whatever reason, try not to go on a Monday or a Friday. Or the beginning of the month, or the end of the month, or during the lunch hour. That's when we're usually the busiest at any given time.
And I can't believe you're not even saying this. You know that if you go to the Watertown branch, it's the second busiest. I don't know if you know that.
You can go to the
Old Country Buffet when you're
right.
done. Oh, my
that
God.
Is one of the
you
most...
can get your nails done. There's a nail place there. There's Target. You know,
spot.
Everybody needs something at Target. You never walk out of there for less than, a lighter wallet.
If we didn't get to you and you're on hold, if you stay on hold, we'll give your phone number to the registries to Rachel Caprillion. If you go to massrmv.com or to mass.com, is it?
Well, you can go to mass.gov, too. That's the major state website.
And that's a way to avoid all the phony websites kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a feedback page, and you respond to all that. Is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, we have staff that responds to that. I don't personally respond to every single one, but I am aware when we have upticks in, matters that have, that are constant and consistent.
Before you go, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much you like this job? You've been doing this 6 years?
This is a great job. 5 years.
5 years.
Which
how
is a long
like
time
this?
In this. I like it. I like it tremendously.
You
mostly because I get to deal with, a lot of our customers. I care about trying to make things better. And the technology of what we're able to do in the future is really exciting
is
beyond
exciting.
It.
And
it
it's
really
not
is.
True that you have to travel incognito.
It's been 5 years and I've never had to travel incognito.
Okay. All right. We've been
Rachel,
talking
really
with Rachel Caprillion, the Massachusetts Register of Motor Vehicles, Registrar, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you,
Rachel
Caprillion.
So, up next, what can a movie about zombies teach us about our world, our dreams, our fears, and our neurotic nightmares? Christopher Lydon tells us the answers up next. That conversation, stay tuned, 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
This summer, there's one place where Afropop meets Spanish bagpipe meets Celtic reels.
The Boston Summer Arts Weekend After Dark.
No eyes to hang.
Friday night, July 26th.
New Orleans legend Dr. John.
Then on Saturday, the 27th,
Angelique Kidjo.
Presented by Citizens Bank.
Check out the entire lineup and reserve your spot now at bostonsummerarts.com.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you and the Boston Speaker Series presented by Lesley University featuring a prime minister, a Pulitzer Prize winner, a humorist, and a former spy. More info at bostonspeakerseries.org. Media support from WGBH and Dedham Savings. And Davis Maugham and DeAugustine, PC, attorneys at law, knowing the lay of the land, not just the law. On the web at davismalm.com. DAVISMALM.com.
We call ourselves Boston Public Radio because we want to be a place where you hear the voices who live here.
Boston Public Radio General Manager Phil Rado.
In this world today, there's no lack of information, but I think there is a lack of serious consideration about all the information that people are exposed to. And so I think our goal is to try to help sort it out. I can't say enough how often when people say how important we are to them, this is our chance to say how important they are to us.
WGBH takes you there. Be a part of the journey. Here's how.
Today you could be part of history. All you have to do is call 888-897-9424, or you can give online at WGBHnews.org. I am Jim Bradley, and she's Marjorie Egan. We're in the midst of the most important fundraiser of the year on Boston Public Radio. But today, it turns out, is more important than ever. That's because we're looking to break a new one-day fundraising speed record. WGBH is looking to raise $150,000 today, but we need your help to get there. And to celebrate the excitement of this potential record, there is a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. Right now, here to tell us about it is our colleague, Kim Saltmarsh.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much. Yeah, this is a really, really special day because we want to break this record, and we can't do it without you. You know, the calls have been coming in, and we have a bunch of people to thank, don't we, Jim?
Can I do that right away? Thanks Please. To those of you who have given just in the last hour. Just name a couple of them quickly. Dorothy in Concord, Mass. Joan in Andover. Tom in Acton, Mass. Join these folks. Support Boston Public Radio with a gift in any amount right now. Let me say the number again, 888-897-9424, or you can give online at WGBHnews.org. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you. And just a reminder, this is your last chance to have your gifts matched during Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. It's the last match of the whole drive. This is your last chance. It ends at 7 p.m. And so you really want to take advantage of it, because if you love Jim and Marjorie and you wanted to support Boston Public Radio anyways, why would you not do it today? Because your gift is going to be double. Again, here's the number to call, 888-897-9424. You can always break the record and have your gift doubled online at WGBHnews.org.
You know, Boston Public Radio's Curiosity Desk, that's Edgar B. Herwick III, recently told the story of a Boston archaeologist who's studying items found during the Big Dig, item that covers over 7,000 years of human history. This is where public radio takes you. It takes you back in time, then back to the present day again. It digs up questions and searches for answers, and it makes you think about the history that's all around you, even beneath your feet. So if you value radio that uncovers truths in unexpected places, please consider supporting Boston Public Radio with a gift in any amount.
Speaking of the present today, a day, easy for you to say, Jim, today only, when you help Boston Public Radio set a one-day fundraising speed record with a gift of $104, we'll say thanks with the WGBH Beach Kit. Here's what it includes: an official WGBH towel, an official WGBH stainless steel water bottle, and an official WGBH gym bag. You show off your support for Boston Public Radio whenever you go this summer anywhere. It's 888-897-9424, or simply give online at WGBHnews.org.
And on top of all of that, if you can believe it, whatever you give today, you're going to be entered to win that trip to Europe, courtesy of Rick Steves. So it's a trip for two to either, your choice, London, Paris, Rome, or Istanbul. Again, courtesy of PBS travel guru Rick Steves Europe. So let's say you pick London, right? How many things could you... Westminster Abbey, St. Paul's Cathedral, the list goes on and on. Windsor Castle, I've been there, it's phenomenal. Plus 6 nights, accommodations, transportation, and more. That can be yours if you enter, if you contribute right now. You call 888-897-9424. You can also give online at WGBHnews.org.
Again, that number is 888-897-9424, or give online at WGBHnews.org. WGBH is looking to make fundraising history today by breaking a new one-day fundraising speed record. And as an added incentive, don't forget, your gift will go twice as far today, thanks to Ralph Lowell Society members Maureen and Mike Rutgers, who are agreeing to match your gift dollar for dollar. This cannot happen without your support. 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org. And thanks.
I'm Rick Steves. For 30 years now, my Rick Steves tours have taken thousands of people to my favorite spots all across Europe. And now I'd like to do the same for you. Make a contribution to WGBH right now, and you'll be entered to win a 7-day tour for two to your choice of Rome, Paris, London, or Istanbul. Enter by calling 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org. And I hope you make a gift to support Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Forget about noshing on brains and walking around with decaying flesh. That's your grandfather's zombie. Today's zombies may actually be telling us something about ourselves, our very real fears, and where the world is heading. Here with us to elaborate on this is our own Roger Ebert. He's just taken in the movie World War Z. He's the man behind RadioOpenSource.org. He joins us every Thursday on Open Mic. Hey there, Christopher Lydon.
Hey there, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. You know, I didn't go to blockbuster movies until I met you. But this is a good one. I don't want to hurt it by saying it's kind of serious, but it's a wonderful movie. And Brad Pitt, you know, I associate him mainly with The Fight Club, which has become a great cult classic of sort of, I think the director, David Fincher, called it, we were born to be hunters and we're living, they trained us to be shoppers and let's rebel. But anyway, that's a classic. I think his Moneyball
performance. So is Thelma and Louise, by the way.
A lot of great movies, but I think this is one of them that will last for a lot of complex reasons, actually. But I think this whole zombie thing is one giant, very persuasive, provocative allegory of the things that bug us, but the condition, the fundamental condition of fragility and instability that we associate with this so-called, you know, the age of the black swan, these things like BP in the Gulf, these catastrophes that any child could have told you would happen someday, but we don't know when they occur, and then we make up stories to evade the real meaning of them. But
can you tell us, without giving it away, I've only read the reviews. Marjorie hasn't seen it either.
Starts in Philadelphia.
Can you just, my hometown. Can you just describe the Philadelphia scene, which even on paper looks brilliant?
It is brilliant. You feel the kind of paper-thin cellophane quality of our life just breaking down instantly, like a house of cards. Suddenly, a perfectly normal, good guy family driving through downtown Philadelphia is beset by, you know, werewolves and the end. Everything's collapsing. And almost immediately we're told that, you know, Washington is gone. The president is gone. The vice president is gone. Russia may be gone. And instantly the system has collapsed. So
and the family is that of Brad Pitt, who is the father in this deal, who right. In every review they say he's not a superhero type.
That's important.
He's just an average guy, right? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, very much so. He's better looking than...
Yes,
well,
he
as
is.
I say, he's,
we've noticed.
He's smarter than I am, but almost as good looking, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But no, he's a regular guy, and that's consistent through the movie. He is not a techie. He's not a doctor. He's not a genius. He's not a warrior. He's barely an American. He's working for the United Nations for humanity, and he does it persuasively. But meantime, these zombies are—they're much worse than anything we saw in, say, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, my favorite sort of zombie movie, until this one. But anyway, it's his adventure flying around the world to North Korea and then Israel and then Wales to sort of try to figure out a remedy. But meantime, your mind goes to, in my case, I mean, three very obvious things that we don't like to talk about: climate change, global warming, this sense that we are straining the system to the break. Obviously, the financial meltdown, and what Nouriel Roubini now calls the new abnormal, the new sort of permanent instability, and also this incredibly fragile digital monster of information, which in the case of, the Snowden case and the NSA is crashing in on our, about to crash in on our phone calls and emails. Something's gone too far, and this can't go on. And yet there's no stability in sight. We live, as Nouriel Roubini says, in a G0 world, not G8, G20, G anything. There's nobody out there that can wants to fight the wars or can finance the repairs. It's a desperate scene.
Okay. Now I have a question for you
because
global warming upsets me and instability upsets me and all these things upsets me. And there are certain movies I go to that that stayed with me for months. Now, this is, he's talking about real life. Well, not real life, because I haven't seen any zombies lately. But the
David, oh, you have. Look closely.
Okay. I guess there's some
that's
secret.
The point.
There's zombies
think.
On your street. Yeah, David God, Denby made
well,
that point.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want it to be like The Exorcist, which was a million years ago, but I had to bless myself nonstop for like 6 months after I saw The Exorcist, because I was so paranoid about being possessed by the devil. And now, I mean, you got this David Denby review in the New Yorker talking about how he got out of the movie, walking through Times Square, worried that people are going to be transformed into zombies all around him. I don't want to become any more paranoid than I already am. So should I see this movie? I'm a little on the edge to begin with.
Yeah.
Christopher
Lydon,
are you nervous
first
now?
First of all, look on your own street. You'll see people who may have been tucked or who have lived too long or don't look quite real. They're there. They're on my street.
God. But I do have a neighbor
not,
I'm concerned
that's
about.
That's not what it's about. I think it's really about these other things like the financial system. The fact that, you know, a sneeze in the Greek parliament can rattle Wall Street. The systems that are so big and so interconnected that they cannot survive. They cannot protect us.
Can we hear a piece of this, by the way? Because Margie and I haven't seen it. I want to really get us in the mood, even though you're close. This is a scene from World War Z with Brad Pitt. Pitt's character is Jerry Lane. He's pulled into service, again, as Chris has said, to help stop the spread of zombies. Listen.
Your secretary here says you were his best investigator when you were at the UN. We'll send you in with the team. Help Dr. Fosbach find whatever it is he needs.
Can't help you. Can't leave my family.
Take a look around here, Mr. Lane. Each and every one of these people are here because they serve a purpose. There's no room here for non-essential personnel. You want to help your family? Let's figure out how we stop this. It's your choice, Mr. Lane.
You know, even the throbbing in the background is enough to put you over the edge.
I know. And, you know, we read that Max Brooks was the son of the great Mel Brooks, is really into these zombies, written
not
the zombie survival guide.
Too.
Yes.
And Max Brooks is Anne Bancroft and Mel Brooks' kid?
Yes.
I did not know that.
And so that there's this mini zombie renaissance going on that – what's that about? Is that all about climate change?
About Max Brooks. I didn't read his zombie survival guide, but this is one scared, but maybe prophetic, maybe real artist guy who worries about everything. I mean, but again, he's on the bird flu, swine flu, global warming, financial meltdown, Katrina, Superstorm Sandy thing, and I mean. Save me from being too serious and solemn, but these are real things, and I think the entertainment industry is trying to wind us up to notice stuff that the news industry really doesn't like to look at very
well. Speaking of real things, don't they take on the Palestinian Israeli issue? Do they not?
That is a piece of it. It's a bit mysterious. Israel is saved for a while in this movie by the fact that it has these very controversial walls, and they're higher than we've ever seen them in the media. They're bringing uninfected Palestinians as well as Israelis into the fold. So there is a kind of common security there. Eventually, though, the zombies overrun their wall. I mean, this is one of the kind of visual and tricks high points of the movie. However, the general...
Standing on each other and each other and each other, correct?
And rolling and climbing. Yeah, this was some animator's or computer graphic masterpiece. But the larger point, and I think this is kind of real, Jim, is the moral is it bears on the immigration legislation. It bears on refugee crises. Is we got to rejoin the human race. Our tricks, I mean, you cannot look at this movie and think, what in the world does our defense budget, do our tanks, do our bombs, how do they bear on the fear that we're so troubled by in this world, which is a matter of disease and poverty and the humanity of these people who are, or the former humanity of these undead Well,
you know what
people.
I'm thinking of, too, that there are certain movies that, that really elucidate, you know, things you don't like to think about and little dark corners and stuff like
this
that
is one of them,
make a
I think.
Big difference. And okay. I think back to the late 1970s, the Jane Fonda China Syndrome movie, that we were not paying a lot of attention necessarily, most of us, to nuclear power. I mean, we were up in New Hampshire with Seabrook and stuff like that. But think about how that affected public policy. And you wonder whether in a different – this is a little bit more amorphous, but in a different way, this might affect our – it might have some repercussions, you know, civic-minded repercussions. Am I making too much of this zombie movie, or is that possible?
No, I think it's plenty possible. I think, for example, if it said, wait a sec, we know under the surface we're all scared witless about climate change. Jeffrey Sachs was talking.
I'm petrified.
Well, when you think about it, we don't talk about the CO2 levels that have now passed 400 parts per million. We don't talk about the hottest month last July 2012 in the hottest year in our history.
Excuse me, Barack Obama spoke about that the other day, and the discussion lasted for about a nanosecond. I've never seen a major, what was billed as a major presidential address, get less attention and less debate going than this the other day. It was unbelievable.
It got sort of rolled over by the whole the Supreme Court decisions.
Yeah,
not
yes.
to mention Aaron Hernandez
but then
locally.
Again, I was not impressed by the president's speech. I mean, he's also going whole hog into fracking, you know, smashing stones to get fuel for an overheated world. No, this is not – does not make sense. And I think it's precisely what this movie is commenting on, the irrelevancy of ideology, of our leadership, of just the real world dealing with – or should we say the public institutions dealing with what we know is driving us nuts.
He needs to see a few zombies. That's my view. That'll get Obama on the mark here.
And by the way, what are zombies, please?
Zombies, you know, I used to think it referred to Dick Cheney. They're the living dead. They're the people
the
who won't
dead.
Go away. They're
okay.
the people who are, you know, forgotten but not gone or whatever, but they're basically.
So these dead, these are dead people in this movie who keep on living in their transformed state.
Yeah, well, are they dead? I mean, that's well, are the, they dead? They're undead, aren't
undead.
They? Yes, whatever
these
that means.
Zombies in World War Z, bite, and noise disturbs them, and when they get into a stampede, they can break through anything, and they bite everything in sight, which infects them, and it becomes this sort of endless galloping wave.
I don't think you can see this, Marjorie. I think
I
I'll have
think
to
so.
See it and I'll explain
think,
it to you the next
I think,
day.
Forget about it. I'll be a basket case.
No, I think you'll like it. I think also, you know, it hits me at the nerve of sort of the general hunger for restoring human standards, rejoining the human race, admitting our complete disbelief in these mathematical systems that is substituted for some human sympathy.
You know, you've been a newsman all your life. Why is it that the mainstream media, because we do, why is it that we so ignore things like climate change? We don't talk about them. You see a story, the occasional story in the Times, occasional story in the Globe, but you hear these stories. Meanwhile, Cape Cod, which I'm obsessed with because my sister and I have my parents' old house there, Shrinking. If you lived a mile and a half from the ocean in East Ham 20 years ago, you're now a mile
from the ocean.
I can
answer the question before he does. I think
Go
the general feeling is that the public is not interested in anything where the impact is not going to be tomorrow. Anything, Social Security running out of money in 20 whatever, Cape Cod being underwater.
I don't think that's true,
though. No, Jim, that doesn't work because the news industry, if it were trying to play that as a strategy, it's not thriving. They're not giving people the kind of information that they so hunger for, I don't think. I mean, ball scores and you know, football players run amok. These by their nature distraction. I don't think the news industry knows how to deal with underlying angst and nightmare. I mean, the kind of fear that Max Brooks seems to be obsessed with.
Were we better at it when you were a cub reporter at the New York Times, Christopher Lydon?
Yeah, I think so, in the sense that the threats were seemingly more political. Nuclear war, you know, was an addressable thing, or you know, poverty, inequality, these are addressable issues. But the vanity, the complete fruitlessness of our attacks in Iraq and Afghanistan, these are almost beyond admitting. Jeffrey Sachs made an interesting point the other day, speaking of the sort of what we think of as a kind of new war zone between running from the Western Sahara and Mali, really across North Africa, through the Middle East, as far east as Afghanistan. And he was saying that, of course, we know this is a war zone. We know there are Sunni-Shia problems, Arab-Israeli problems, Arab-African problems. But the underlying truth of it is that it's a giant drought area. This is what's driving the fear, the hostility, the shortage, the hunger, the poverty, an almost inescapable conflict over resources, and we never frame it that way.
Can I tell you, speaking
we
of
never
framing,
frame it as a climate framing, problem.
You know what I'm thinking as you're speaking? And Marjorie mentioned the China syndrome, and while I actually loved it and I love Jane Fonda, it was one of those in-your-face kind of things. We discussed this in the context of Homeland, for example, and drone policy.
We did.
And it is clear to me, not having seen this movie yet, even though I'm obsessed with Homeland, is that it's entertainment vehicles, and I don't mean entertainment in a disparaging way, entertainment vehicles that have a far greater ability to get in our heads
yes.
about things that matter than being lectured to in a straight
Maybe
news.
Maybe Jane Fonda needs to
no,
come
I'm
back
serious.
And do the Cape Cod is Washed Away by a Big Wave movie, and we'll all be paying more attention.
Or Barbarella encounters the zombies. Yeah, I'd love to see that movie.
Can I just say,
yes, you can.
I keep my head keeps reverting to a talk. It was actually an interruption of a talk by an Italian lawyer, law professor, teaches in California and in Turin. But he said, wait just a minute. This is early Obama. And he said, you're not dealing with the crisis. 20 years ago, one end of the Cold War pillar, of the Cold War, you know, that the Russia, the Soviet end collapsed. The question of despite the best efforts of Mikhail Gorbachev, your Gorbachev is Barack Obama. And the real question is whether he can hold this kind of single empire of the sort of, shall we say, the feckless power of the American military against a human tide of not only human needs and poverty and hunger, but also a deep longing to be human beings again. And he wasn't betting on it, but it seems to me he says, Obama is your Gorbachev. Can he hold together an empire that's built on numbers and military power and wealth against the tide? And again, in that movie, World War Z, I felt this is the question again. The tide is still out there. And nothing we can do or no alliance of forces that we can quite imagine seems to promise any kind of victory.
And that movie makes you think about those questions, so maybe there will be more civic engagement by all the young people, because it's mostly young people that go to the movies now who see this thing.
Well, maybe civic engagement, but also a certain recognition that so many of the tricks we love aren't working.
Christopher Lydon, I'm going to get all zombied up this weekend because of you. I want to tell you, World War Z,
yeah.
Christopher Lydon from RadioOpenSource.org. It's a pleasure to see you. We'll see you next
Always
Thursday.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Christopher Lydon. Up next from zombies.
It's not right now, actually.
It's right now.
We're doing right now.
It's right now. Right now.
With us on the phone from the Moakley Courthouse, after what we were told is one of the most dramatic days, well, I don't know if of testimony, but at least of reaction in the courtroom, is WGBH's Adam Riley. Adam, thanks so much for calling in.
Hey, guys. My pleasure.
What happened, Adam?
That's a broad question.
I heard something about Whitey Bulger in an outburst. That's what I was
Whitey
referring
apparently
to.
dropped an F-bomb. So the big event today, and a lot of us, I think you guys included, have been waiting for this for a while, is John Morris, the former head of the Boston FBI's organized crime division, finally took the stand to testify for the government. Now, Morris, of course, is someone who was deeply, deeply compromised by his relationship with Bulger and Stephen Flemmy. A lot of people think that, in addition to John Connolly, he should probably be doing jail time. Instead, he got immunity.
And you should wait before you go ahead. Total immunity, yeah. Meaning no jail time, no penalty, no nothing in return for his testimony. Correct?
It's jaw dropping, isn't it? And when he described, he took the stand today and talked through how he came to be involved with Bulger and Flemmy and what the nature of their relationship was. And it's just insane. Toward the beginning, John Connolly, who already knew, Bulger from South Boston and knew Flemmy as well, convinced Morris that he should have these guys to his home in Lexington. So first, there was a time when he hosted Bulger, and John Connolly was also there, again, at his Lexington home. Then there was a second meeting where Flemmy came along, so it was before them, at John Morris' home in Lexington. And the prosecutor, Fred Wyshek, said, you know, is this something that's ordinarily done with informants? And Morris had to admit, this is pretty much something that's never done at all. You don't have two informants or possible informants come over to your house to meet and hang out. But as he explained it, what Connolly told him he needed to do was make Bulger and Flemmy feel comfortable, make them feel like they weren't going to be treated like other informants, like they were special. So that's how it all started. It was interesting. Morris was pushed to talk about what he remembered from the details of those meetings. And initially he said, oh, you know, so long ago. I mean, this is early 1970s. So long ago, I really can't remember it. But then later, he was able to remember, you know, John Connolly talking to him in the kitchen of his home in Lexington during one of these meetings, saying that what these guys wanted in exchange for cooperating was a heads up. If they were ever about to be charged with something, they wanted advance notice so they could get out of town.
And Adam Reilly, what was the moment in this testimony when Bulger had his first courtroom outburst?
Well, the funny thing about this outburst is it was apparently both very piquant, if that's the appropriate word to use, but also kind of subtle because Judge Denise Casper didn't notice it when it happened. Those of us sitting in the media area, I think, didn't notice it either. But apparently there was a moment in the first part of Morris's testimony. We're at the morning break right now, and this happened before we wrapped up for the morning break. There was a point in Morris's testimony where Bulger looked at him. He'd been making a ton of eye contact. You could see that from the media section. But apparently he looked over at Morris and said, "You're an effing liar," and I'm paraphrasing with effing. And so when we reached a break, the government attorneys were apoplectic about this. They said, you know, he has no right to sit here and act like, you know, act like he was accustomed to acting in his criminal heyday and you know, make threatening comments like this to someone who's testifying. So Judge Denise Casper said, you know, that she had missed this outburst when it happened, and she cautioned Bulger. She said, "You're two capable counsels. We're here to speak for you in court, so let them do the talking." And he said, you know, "I get it. I'll do that." But yeah, it was very strange both that this happened and that it happened in such a quiet way that most of us didn't hear about it until after the fact.
Is there any indication?
Go ahead.
Is there any indication that the jury heard what Bulger had to say?
It's impossible to say right now. But again, there was no caution from the judge in the moment because she wasn't even aware of it. My hunch is that if the judge didn't catch it, the jury probably didn't either. The way the courtroom is set up, Bulger would have been looking toward Morris and away from the jury as he said this. So unclear, maybe if some of them have really good hearing or something like that, but my hunch would be that they didn't pick up on it either. It's just worth mentioning here, this is such a long and complex and ugly saga that I always need to remind myself of key details. And just for listeners who might not be familiar with this story, over the course of his relationship with Bulger and Flemmy, as John Morris got in deeper and deeper with these guys, they did things for him like give him a case of wine. This is a case of wine that was apparently delivered by John Connolly, his FBI colleague, to Morris in the basement of the JFK building. Morris said today that, you know, when he got this case of wine from Bulger and Flemmy, he was uncomfortable about it. But Connolly told him, "Oh, these guys really, really like you. And if you return it, they're going to think that you don't trust them. So you can take it back to them if you want, but I'm not going to do it." And, of course, he held on to the case of wine. He also got, I believe, a silver-plated champagne case, an ice bucket, and then in a true, you know, this is one of those moments, it's really stranger than fiction. Morris talked about how he was carrying on, he didn't phrase it this way, he was carrying on an affair with a woman who was not his wife. His mistress was named Deborah Noseworthy, which is one of the all-time great names, in my opinion. So he wanted to bring her down to Georgia for a conference he was going to. And what he decided to do was ask Flemmy and Bulger if they could pay for Noseworthy's ticket, which actually ended up costing $1,000. And he asked them through John Connolly, his FBI colleague, and they paid for it. And as he put it, he was asked about his state of mind at this point after he had had them pay for a $1,000 ticket for his mistress to go with him on a business trip. And he put it very blandly. He said, "Well, you know, after the case of wine and after the ticket, I realized that I was deeply compromised." And that, of course, is putting it very mildly.
Adam Reilly, I wonder, you know, the defense obviously wants to present these FBI people as totally unbelievable. How credible is Morris on the stand?
He comes across, just purely in terms of demeanor, he comes across as credible, I think. He's not impressive. You know, you get the impression, he kind of reminds me of, he's sort of like a classic mid-level bureaucrat type who carries himself with a little bit of swagger at yeah. first, but then, you know, in the course of being challenged, obviously in a pretty intense context here, the swagger disappears. So he's not an impressive individual on the stand, but you don't get the impression, as he testifies, at least I don't, that you're watching kind of a BS artist or someone who is making up things out of whole cloth. His testimony has the feel of authenticity. There was nothing that, you know, made me raise my eyebrows. I can't speak for other people who are watching in court who've been reporting on this for longer than I have, but he comes across, I think, as generally credible. One other interesting thing worth pointing out, and actually this dovetails nicely with your question about credibility. He is credible, but in the course of his testimony, he's talking about all these things that he's done in the past that really should impugn his credibility.
Yeah.
Like, for example, when there was talk of maybe getting rid of Bulger and Flemmi as FBI informants, the thought was that their identity had been compromised in this Lancaster Street garage investigation. Maybe they're becoming a liability rather than an asset. John Connolly wrote a report. John Connolly, John Morris's colleague and best friend at the FBI, wrote a report saying, you know, these guys are just so valuable, we can't possibly part ways with them as informants. Morris signed off on the report. Today in court, though, he admitted that this report engaged in what he called some puffery, that it made Bulger and Flemmi out to be more valuable as informants than they actually were. And the only explanation he offered for that, so essentially he was signing off on a lie, and he said, well, I should have called John Connolly on this exaggeration, and I didn't, and I regret that mistake, and I never thought in a million years that this document would see the light of day. So he's acknowledged on a few occasions lying in the past, which I guess should give you pause about everything he's saying on court, in court on the stand now, especially since, as we said at the outset, he got this sweet immunity deal.
Adam, thanks.
Thank you so much for giving us the update today on the Whitey Bulger trial. That was Adam Riley from WGBH, and he has been in the courtroom covering this case from the beginning.
We should also say, on an unrelated note, the Globe is reporting that state and federal indictments are to be announced 3 o'clock this afternoon against alleged Boston Marathon bomber Zahar Tsarnaev. CBS News is saying there are 30 counts. Let me just say one thing before we break.
What?
Martirano, 20 murders, at least 12 years. Morris, all the corruption that we talked about and facilitation of horrible things, no years. It is really hard, in my estimation, for the government to explain how these deals were not just grotesque.
When we come back, Karen Miller joins us to talk about a term we're hearing a lot these days, big data. How can big data make our lives better? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Updating their Facebook status online, sending friend requests on the go. College students are famous for their internet savvy, but a provocative new study shows that not all social media is created equal, and how students use social media can actually affect their success in school. We'll talk about it next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Subaru of New England, introducing the all-new redesigned Subaru Forester with all-wheel drive. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. More information available online at SubaruofNewEngland.com. And Live Nation, presenting Belle and Sebastian with Yo La Tengo, live at the Bank of America Pavilion in Boston on Tuesday, July 9th. For tickets and more information, you can visit LiveNation.com.
One person can make a big difference. But when a whole community comes together, amazing things can happen. And right now, when you support Boston Public Radio, amazing things will happen. That's because other listeners have gotten together and agreed to match your gift in any amount, dollar for dollar. But the match won't last long. Call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at WGBHnews.org.
Call 888-897-9424 or get online at WGBHnews.org. Today could be a record-breaking day here on Boston Public Radio because of you. WGBH is looking to break a new one-day fundraising speed record as part of the most important fundraiser of the year. The goal is to raise $150,000 in one day, but this can't happen unless you can support us and make a pledge for great radio on the air. And to start things off, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. With us is Kim to tell us all about it.
Yeah, here's the deal. Look, we've got just about 20 minutes left, 21 minutes or so, to take advantage of the last chance to get your gift doubled for Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. This is the last chance to have your gift doubled, so please take advantage of it. We've been hearing from all across the state, Lynn, Brookline, Milton, Worcester. Please be a part of this. And keep in mind, when you do give a gift of $104 right now, today only, WGBH is going to say thanks with that WGBH beach kit we've been telling you about. It's got a towel, a water bottle, a gym bag. Show off your support for Boston Public Radio wherever you go this summer. Also, a gift of $100. You're going to get tickets to the WGBH Craft Beer Festival. There's two tickets. It's Saturday, July 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the WGBH studios here in Brighton. It's really, really an exciting stuff. Plus, you'll be helping brew up more great programs by supporting Boston Public Radio. So here's the number to call to help us beat the record, to have your gift doubled, and of course to get some great thank you gifts. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Thank you, Kim. You can join others in your community. Help make history immediately. Help WGBH break a new one-day fundraising speed record. Don't forget, your gift in any amount is matched dollar for dollar. Thanks to the Ralph Lowell Society members, Maureen and Mike Rutgers. Here's how you can preserve great radio for this community. It's quite simple, actually. You call 888-897-9424, or you can give online at wgbhnews.org. And from Marjorie and me and Kim, thank you.
WGBH is attempting to set a fundraising speed record. That means every WGBH station is coming together to raise $150,000 in just one day. $6,250 an hour, or $104 a minute. So take a minute to support Boston Public Radio with a gift of $104 right now. And today only, WGBH will say thanks with the WGBH Beach Kit. It comes complete with a beach towel, a stainless steel water bottle, and a sturdy gym bag. And it's a great way to show off your support of WGBH. Call 888-897-9424 or do your part online at wgbhnews.org.
I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. When I hear the term big data, I think Edward Snowden and the NSA snooping on us. But big data apparently is far bigger than that. What is it? Is it primarily a force for good? Can it really help reduce electric bills, make seniors safe in their homes, reduce the risk of heart attacks? Here to answer all those questions, at least we hope, is the woman behind the Innovation Hub. That would be Kara Miller. Hello, Kara.
Hey, Jim.
So what is big data?
So it's a lot of things. I mean, basically what's happened is that the world is now able to track all these things you do. You did them 20, 30 years ago, right? But we're able to track them in a way that we haven't before. So let me talk about some really great things that big data can do, some kind of scary things,
okay,
too.
Okay, we're ready.
All right, so a really good thing, and I know you were really interested in this because I saw you in the newsroom earlier today, yeah, and you're like, wow. So there's this one thing called a magic carpet.
I love this.
Right? That researchers have worked on. And basically what it does is you know, very often elderly people, the first thing that happens to them that sort of starts a downward spiral is that they fall, you know, and then they're not mobile and then they're not exercising and sort of things go downhill from there. So preventing people from falling is one of those really, really big things. So this magic carpet essentially tracks what you do every day. It just looks like a regular carpet, but it has these tiny microchip sensors in it. So as you walk on it every day, it knows, well, Marjorie gets up every day around 7 o'clock and starts walking on the carpet and her foot falls with this amount of weight. And then when things start feeling a little different, maybe you're getting up later, the first footfall on the carpet's at a different time, or your step seems less steady, it can email you, email your doctor, email your daughter or son across the country and say, you know, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, their step seems a little different. It's likely, looking at all the data we have from all the people who've ever stepped on this kind of thing, it looks like in a week or two, mom or dad's going to fall.
That is
I am speechless.
Amazing. The carpet is going to email your relatives.
I understand that.
And then you won't have those commercials anymore. I've fallen.
Okay, fine. Don't make fun. It's a hard.
I'm not. We're all going to be there sooner or later. Some of us sooner than others.
When you both hear the, I know there are a lot of other examples you're going to give us. When you hear these kinds of things, isn't your first reaction, this is fabulous? And then you say to yourself, but maybe it's not so fabulous. I mean, I know the outcome. It is so scary. There is everything we do that can be monitored to make predictions about everything.
No, that's true. I mean, no, let me just say, about a year ago, we talk about the magic carpet, like, wow, it's amazing. Wait until that comes and it can email us. About a year ago, I interviewed this guy, David Rose, an entrepreneur in Cambridge. He started a bunch of companies. And one of his companies that he started was this company called Vitality that then got taken out by a huge company. And it makes these pill bottles. They look like the kind of pill bottles that you get when you go to CVS or Walgreens. You get your prescription, those sort of amber-colored bottles, right? But the lid is a little bit thicker than those white lids. It's a white lid, but it's a little thicker. And it has a computer chip in it. And so if you don't take your medicine that day, and that's one of the things that happens when you get older, right? You might forget to take it. Or sometimes people think, I don't need to take, you know, the rest of my antibiotics prescription. I'm sure I'm fine, right? It can email you. And it's already out there. It's happening. A lot of companies, like I think Novartis is using it for their patients. So it can email you. It can email your son or daughter across the country and say, you know, Mom did not take her medication today.
I think this is already happening.
That is a good one.
We're talking with Karen Miller about big data and how it can help your life get better. Now, this is not – divorce is not a happy thing, but right. I think you could head some people off at the pass who may be thinking about getting married right now. If they could predict whether or not they're going to get divorced. How does big data do that?
Yeah, so I don't know if you can predict whether you are going to get divorced before you get married.
Okay.
But credit card lists – credit card companies have had lists for a while of people who are likely to get divorced. So you think, wait, not get divorced, likely to get divorced. How do they know? Oh, there's a bunch of data points because think about it. Everybody has credit cards. So they have millions of data points of people who've already gotten divorced and what their credit histories looked like
so
just prior to
hotel
that.
Rooms.
So there's an obvious one. Staying in a hotel room in your own city.
Yeah. Very suspicious.
Sending flowers to an address that's not your own. Okay, those are some obvious ones, but some less obvious ones.
What?
Getting your teeth whitened, joining a gym. Now, each one of these individually, it's not to say that if your spouse just joined a gym, they are having an affair, you're about to get divorced. That is not what I'm saying. But all these things in aggregate, you put them all together, as they have with people in the past who've gotten divorced, and they realize this person, very likely, there's a number of indicators that are telling us this person is probably going to get divorced. Now, the question is, but why do the credit card companies care? They don't know you. Why would they care whether you're about to get divorced?
Your ability to pay a bill, right?
You got it.
Well, hold on, But what good does it do you as if you're the spouse? I mean, the credit Visa's not going to call you up and tell you about your husband.
I'm just saying they know you're about to get divorced.
They know.
They're not going to tell you you're about to get divorced. Because the reason is if you call up and you say, you know, I really need an extended credit line, they know that you are likely a bad credit risk because when people get divorced, their money tends to be split in half, right? So they know that, you know, they probably are not going to extend you more money.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And a little scary that they may know before you know that you're about to get divorced.
I'm ready to join the Amish. You know, on one level, you say to yourself, really, this is unbelievable, but it's so intrusive. I mean, I know like the magic carpet, you choose yourself. It isn't like someone sticks it in your house against your wishes. And so a lot of these things can't be done to you. You have to do them unto yourself.
But so many people do things to them. I mean, that's one of the things about big data. It is always a trade-off. It is a trade-off of what do you get? You get benefits. And what do you give away? You give away privacy.
Exactly.
Right? So there's a Progressive Insurance, which you may know, has this new...
That's the ad with that great woman. What's the name of the woman who's in all the ads?
Betty White?
No, not Betty White. The young woman, whatever her name is. Can I help us out over there, will you guys?
I don't know.
It is. She's in all the commercials. Go ahead.
Okay, so they have this thing called Snapshot that they've been trying out actually for a while now. And it's this little device. You put it in your car, and it basically tracks how fast you go. It tracks whether you drive between midnight and 4 a.m., which is a very sort of high danger time to drive. It tracks how fast or how hard you slam the brakes. Now, why does it do this and why would you possibly want this?
They're going to give you a break
because,
in your insurance.
Yes, because you believe that you're a good driver. You don't generally drive at 2 a.m. You know, that you believe these that you're going to be able to save money. So Progressive says, well, if you want to save money, put this in your car. We'll track you. We'll see how fast you go. And then you can save money. So it's always this trade-off. And, I mean, you were talking about the magic carpet. Yeah, but if you get that, which is great, you don't think that that information is out there somewhere
in the
cloud?
And an insurance company is going to get it exactly.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, the classic is the Mass Pike. I mean, the transponders.
Absolutely.
And lots of us have transponders because they help you out. Obviously, you can cut the line or there is no line, but then they know where you're going and you get it in your bill. You see exactly where you went for the last month. There was a very interesting – what is the name of this book? The Big Data – what's the name of this book?
Yeah, it's called The Human Face of Big Data.
Yes, it is a fantastic, beautiful, huge coffee table book. And I thought it was a bargain at $50 actually because a lot of novels cost 25 or 30. But anyway, they have this a couple of great things in there talking about big data in terms of anti-terrorism. And one of the great factoids they mention is that a lot of us are afraid of cargo, you know, that they don't inspect enough cargo coming to the United States. The next bad thing is going to come in cargo. But they talk about a way to combat the hidden nasty devices in cargo with these little things they attach to all the cargo crates so they can tell if there's bad things inside them or not. They're all going to be hooked up with these computer chips, and that will eliminate, I hope, the problem of the bad things coming in these cargo.
By the way, now that it's over, we can say, do you know who was the guy who was most obsessed with the whole failure to check cargo, just as an aside? Ed Markey.
One of the reasons he voted
against one of those security things, Homeland Security things,
and
that Steve Lynch is all over.
They also talk about how we process in one single day more information than a person in the 1500s did in their entire lifetime.
Yes. I mean, 90% of the data that exists out there has been generated in the last 2 years. And you think of like hundreds of thousands of years that people have been around. 2 years, 90%. So now when cities are built, especially in countries where cities are more planned, like China, they are embedding little chips in all sorts of bridges, in roads, because right now the way it is, you know, there's potholes here and there, and there's sort of this kind of haphazard way of finding out where the potholes are. But what if you embedded microchips everywhere so that you knew that a bridge was wobbly, that it was right before it fell down, before there was, you know, catastrophe that we saw in Minnesota, that kind of thing happened, there was a master control center, and this is happening in cities all over China. There's this sort of master control center where people sit in front of computers and they say, you know what? You need to go reinforce this bridge. There's a problem there, which is so much more effective than have sort of trucks spending gas all day trying to find out what's going on, just sort of checking bridges one by one, and 92% of them are fine and 8% of them have problems. What if you just had sensors embedded everywhere in a city? And I guarantee you, that is where we are going. I have met with people who are creating bikes that have sensors in the wheel. And the sensors can do things for you, the bike rider, but they can also do things like measure the level of pollution as you're driving by. And it can all feed into, you know how they say, oh, well, here's the level of pollution today, and like this, it's an unsafe level in Boston, so be careful. Soon that's going to be gotten, instead of by trucks and by big machines, it's going to be gotten by you riding your bike or going down the street with a car or whatever.
Now, Marjorie is smiling at virtually everything you're saying. I'm getting hives from everything you're saying. Now, why am I so nervous about all this? Is it
because
of Edward
Snowden?
Because
you're under the delusion that you have privacy left.
Maybe that
don't.
Is. I mean, how are you on this, all this? I know this is your beat, so to speak. But doesn't this cause you anxiety as well, Kara Miller?
I mean, it doesn't really cause me anxiety because I don't think there's any alternative. It's like saying, you know, I have anxiety about the fact that there are cars outside on the road. I don't think we're going back. I don't think we're getting rid of them.
I have anxiety about that, too.
Yes,
by the way,
well, sometimes some people have elevated, you know, levels of anxiety. No, this is clearly where we're going. And I mean, if you look at the Edward Snowden case, I think that's the NSA leaker who is now in parts
Moscow,
unknown.
Right.
Yes, Moscow, right?
The airport.
And I mean, I think one of the really interesting things is when President Obama sort of addressed the Edward Snowden leaks, he was like, we're not getting data about you. What we're getting is metadata, which I think is so funny because here he is with this sort of technical IBM kind of term. What is metadata? I'm sure people at home were thinking, they're not collecting data, they're collecting metadata. What the heck is that? Metadata is all the data that surrounds the data. So, Jim, you go on Amazon tonight, you buy a book, right? That's the data. You bought a book. Mm-hmm. But there's all sorts of metadata about it. When did you buy it? So when are people most likely to go online and buy books? Where did you buy it from? Well, you bought it from a computer in the Boston area. So what if we're, you know, comparing Boston buyers of books with San Francisco and Austin, Texas buyers of books? Well, it turns out that certain books are selling better in Boston, right? And how do they know that? Because they have your data. So that's okay. That's the metadata.
So how soon is it going to be that parents are offered the option, instead of having to worry about the 4,000 things that are happening around you, just put this little chip in your brand new baby.
Oh, in your brand new baby.
No, I'm serious. I don't mean to be. I mean, that's not unreal, is it? To say we're going to monitor his or her health. All these fabulous things are going to happen. Just pop the chip in. You go on your computer at night. You can
find
it.
My dog has one already.
I was going to say, yeah. People with pacemakers already have devices inside them that track them and what
their
body is doing.
Oh, yeah. You interviewed by this Rick Smolin guy who, I mean, obviously has a great history with some incredible projects. The guy who's behind this,
right.
The Human Face of Big Data. You interviewed this character?
Yes, I did.
And what's your sense of him?
He's a fascinating guy. So he's really a photographer. He's worked for Time. He's worked for National Geographic. And every few years, he wants a really big project. So he was actually at a party, I think, with Marissa Mayer, who's the head of Yahoo, the CEO. She used to be at Google. And she was like, you should do something on big data. And he was like, that does not sound interesting. What am I going to do, like take pictures of people in front of computers?
He's done it brilliantly. And
he did it brilliantly.
To make it look like it's not hard to read.
And there are these fabulous pictures. There's this one picture of a guy from MIT, and he's just standing in a sea of paper that's about up to his knees. And it's the EKG data from one person that's generated in 10 hours.
And what does it do? That's the significant thing. What can they do with this EKG data?
So, okay. So what they're trying to do, what they're trying to do is predict when you're going to have a heart attack.
Exactly.
So how amazing would it be if your EKG data was matched up against all these people who've had heart attacks and haven't, and they emailed you a week or two before you had a heart attack and said, Marjorie, it looks like it's coming, but it hasn't happened yet. This is your chance.
How about
that? You've got to do something.
How about that, Jim?
I don't know if I want to know.
Are you
sorry?
Too shy?
I know I do. It's just I see Edward Snow. I don't know.
It's the benefit versus the cost.
So are you doing
this?
Are you doing this tonight? By the way, or when?
No,
are you doing?
But Saturday. Saturday.
What are you doing tonight?
I don't remember.
I'm so glad to hear somebody else not know.
You're on tonight, 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock.
But we are
mixed
on
up.
At 9, and I'm sure it'll be a fabulous show.
Fabulous.
I can't remember. I've been working on another show.
College 2.0, we were just told.
Yes,
by our
College 2.0, which is a great show.
Saturday at 10 is Big Data, correct?
You got it.
Okay.
Chelsea said that was just Big Data helping us out, figure out what she was doing. Hey, Kara, that was great. Thanks so much. We appreciate it. Okay, so we're actually going away just for a second, are we not? We're not going for good. Don't go away. We'll be back in seconds. We want you to stick around with us. It's really important, so go nowhere.
You know that public broadcasting takes you on a journey. The only question is, how fast will you get there? Today, Boston Public Radio is joining every WGBH station, every WGBH program to set a new one-day fundraising speed record. $150,000 in a single day, or just above 6,000 DPH. That means dollars per hour. And right now on Boston Public Radio, every gift in any amount is being matched dollar for dollar by Ralph Lowell Society members Maureen and Mike Rutgers. Call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at WGBHnews.org.
It's photo day. Now, you were listening. I hope you know this. The Boston Public Radio on 89.7 WGBH. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. We're in the middle of the most important fundraiser yet for WGBH. But today is a very special part of the campaign. We're getting pretty excited. WGBH has a chance to break a new one-day fundraising speed record. It's not a moment too soon because WGBH's fiscal year now ends on June 30th. It's just 3 days from now. So on top of that, there is also a dollar-for-dollar match in effect, which is great. You can help make fundraising history right now. Here to explain the match and all other kinds of things is Kim Saltmarsh. Hi, Kim.
Hey, look, just a couple minutes left to have your gift match dollar for dollar. It is the last chance to have your gift match dollar for dollar, have your gift doubled for Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. So you want to take advantage of it. We just have a couple of minutes. We still need to hear from about 8 people or so. so let's sneak those calls in. Here's the number, 888-897-9424, or online at wgbhnews.org.
Again, the number is 888-897-9424, or give online at wgbhnews.org. Remember, this is the most important fundraiser for Boston Public Radio. WGBH is looking to break a new one-day fundraising speed record. That's thanks to Ralph Lowell Society members Maureen and Mike Rutgers, who are agreeing to match every gift dollar for dollar. This will not happen without you, so please join this historic day, 888-897-9424, or give online, wgbhnews.org, and thanks.
NPR is a community. It's a voice for people all over this country.
To people who are often overlooked because they're not glamorous or famous or at the top of the headlines.
NPR is job hunting with a single mother in St. Louis.
NPR is where you hear surprises. It's where we go to meet the people behind the people changing the world.
Because this is what we do here, and it's really the only thing that matters.
This
is NPR.